following podcast is from Science Associates. In a recent presentation to the Leadership Breakfast of Maryland, Science Associates founder Dr. Thomas Hoffman discussed how excellence in leadership can benefit from a deeper understanding of how the mind works at an emotional level. His talk is titled, Know Your Mind, The Royal Road to Leadership.
Until about 3 months ago, I was firmly decided to talk some more about cheating and leadership as cheating management. That was the last talk that I gave here. But a couple of things intervened that led me to pick this topic. I was invited to be the discussant of a neuroscience talk at an organization that does organizational consulting. And Dr. Soames, whom you'll hear about today, was the speaker. And I figured I better reacquaint myself with his work. I've been watching his work for about 5 or 6 years. But I went in depth into his work, and I thought it was so relevant and so elegant that I'd like to share some of his ideas, and what I'm going to present are mainly his ideas and the people that he works with you, and get your thoughts about how this applies to our general interest in leadership. So I titled the talk Royal Road to Leadership. How many people have in mind the reference to the Royal Road? What is the Royal Road? Not you. Really? No one else? Freud said, dreams are the royal road to the unconscious. And whether they are or not is a question. We really don't understand dreams that much. But they're a way of getting to where you'd like to go. And this is a leadership discussion. I'd like to present the hypothesis that knowing the mind, including from the neurological and neuroscientific perspective, is the way to enhance our leadership abilities. So I apologize that this is an old clip that I took, and certainly the mind is in the minds of everybody. I was in Bethesda the other day in front of a restaurant, and they advertised their offerings. There was a mindfulness special. So I'll read it for you. Agnes, who's an interesting character, if you follow her as I do, always an out-of-the-box thinker. Ever since that guy we saw on TV told us to start practicing mindlessness, I have discovered true peace. Her buddy says, he didn't say mindlessness, he said mindfulness. Agnes reflects, well, peace is peace. So, just to introduce and get some experiential part into this didactic talk, I have an experiential piece at the end. If we don't have time, we don't have time. But we will definitely have interactions. I invite you to stop me, interrupt, points of information, objections, whatever. I'm fine with it. So, what is the mind? People have been trying to understand the mind for probably hundreds, if not thousands, of years. There are different disciplines that look at the mind. I'm going to focus today on psychology, which is my interest currently. I'm going to use perspectives from psychoanalysis as a branch of psychology and try to bring some support from the neuroscience and the latest discoveries in neuroscience, including those made by Dr. Soames and Jak Panskep, who is a veterinarian and animal ethologist. My colleague and mentor, Larry Hirshhorn, and I have had a number of discussions on the applications of this body of information to leadership. So I always tell you what I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you, and then I'll tell you what I've told you. So in that spirit, this is what I'd like to cover today. Now, understand that it's a very ambitious agenda, but I'm going to give it a shot. Also, the solution to world peace, I did not mention on the slide. So what is the mind? Here is your answer, again, in the framework that I'm going to present to you. It has four aspects or components: subjectivity, consciousness and unconsciousness, intentionality, I think that was mentioned, and agency, what some people call free will. So I'm going to explore these topics in turn. So subjectivity, what is subjectivity? Subjectivity is, if you go to the internet and the online dictionaries, subjectivity arises within the brain. I brought a brain with me. I have some more brains. If you'd like one of the brains, please ask me afterwards. My shipment didn't come in, so I can't give them to everybody, and I know some people still have theirs from previous talks. But so it arises within the brain. It represents an internal reality. Maybe someone was reaching for that with identity. And the dictionary definition is characteristic of or belonging to reality as perceived rather than independent of mind. So mind is independent of subjectivity, is dependent on subjectivity, and vice versa, as my Italian colleagues say. Now, I think behaviorism is wonderful. We've learned a lot from the works of behavior, but behavior is not mind. That is one of the messages I'm going to try to emphasize today. And the mind is not behavior. I'll try to explain that for you. So, the body, the brain, as part of the body, is the objective aspect of you. I look at you, I see you, I see your body. I can't see your mind. The brain is the objective correlate of this subjective behavior. It's where it originates. It's how we get to it. We can make correlations, but that's all we can do. Another way of saying it, you or I are the subject aspect of your body, and the mind is the subjective aspect of the brain. That makes sense? I know it's a tough concept, but I'm going to try to bring you around to that point of view. So one way to remember this is one of my favorite little ditties. I never saw a purple cow. I never hope to see one, but I can tell you anyone, I'd rather see than be one. The mind is a kind of purple cow. You cannot see it. Is that okay? Now, if people object, we're willing to entertain that. But you cannot see your mind. You can only be your mind. Subjectivity has two sides. One is the subjective aspect of you, and a big problem is getting at the subjective aspect of someone else. The two-way street is how we think of ourselves is subjective, but actually how we think of reality is also subjective. How many people have encountered this dress on the internet? Okay, so what color is it? Can't answer that. Actually, you can, and you can look online. You can find the neuroscience and the optical wavelength measurements and sensitivities of different people to explain this phenomenon, but the fact is, it is subjective. That dress is not, for our purposes, blue or white or gold or black. To me, it looks sort of blue and brown. And for me, that's blue and brown. Doesn't mean I'm wrong. Doesn't mean the people who see it as white and gold are wrong. That is the essence of subjectivity. So now that we've covered that clearly, let's go on to the second aspect of mind, consciousness and unconsciousness. So here, I just grabbed a picture from the internet. We have three people. How many people in this photograph are conscious? So we think the nurse is conscious. We're guessing that she's conscious. The patient, we don't know. He could be asleep, could be in a coma, He could be closing his eyes because the doctor is in his face. We do not know whether he is conscious or not. And even if he is asleep, is he conscious? Yes. And again, colloquially, he may not be, but I'm going to say scientifically, he is. I can't help this dig. The doctor is